Now, stay tuned. We have the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show right here on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Yes, for this hour, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Michael Arnold, a local MD.
Retired.
Just recently retired. Just give him the freedom to investigate COVID from his free perspective of understanding what's really going on medically.
And being concerned for his fellow humans.
And looking at what you might say are alternatives to the vaccine. And we're going to be getting into it for the first half hour, then we'll take some calls.
Everybody who really likes science should have questions for Michael, who has been immersed to a ridiculous degree in reading all the scientific things pertaining to COVID, not COVID, vaccination, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. And thank you, Dr. and Mrs. Future, for having me in your beautiful studio.
Well, thank you for being you and giving us so much valuable insight to the world we live in.
Yeah, so let's start at the beginning here, Michael. You retired just before this whole crisis started, right? From an active practice in Monterey?
I had an active practice in Monterey, mostly in acupuncture and Chinese herbs, although I'm a medical doctor.
Uh-huh.
And I have plenty of experience in the normal clinic as well.
Lots of folks here in this area, you are aware of alternative approaches to health besides the allopathic model.
Yes, and I also have a master's of science in traditional Chinese medicine, and I'm a licensed acupuncturist as well. So I have kind of a foot in both worlds.
East and west.
Nice. East and west.
So when you first heard this virus thing coming down, what was your initial thoughts?
Well, at first I was like, okay. I didn't have much in the way of thoughts at all. And then a friend of mine called me up and said, I want you to check into this. And I said, oh, you know, I'm retired. I want to play guitar. I want to walk on the beach. And he said, I'll pay you money.
Because, now you speak my language.
That's right. Because I can work as a consultant, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I started digging into it. And I called him up a week or two later, and we talked. And I said, well, these numbers aren't making sense. They're not making any sense at all.
Which numbers were you looking at?
Well, here's an example. The death rate. If you have COVID, what's your chances of dying? And I said, the newspapers are saying that the death rate's like 3.5%.
Way higher than the flu.
Way higher than the flu. But if you really go in there and start reading, that's 3.5% of people who get admitted to the hospital.
Which is a teeny, teeny, weeny percent of all the people in the world.
A very tiny fraction, since most healthy people, more than 99%, simply experience SARS-CoV-2 infection as a mild colder flu at best, or at
worst. Yes, like before all of the billions of dollars of propaganda to make us sure that it's going to kill us individually or someone we know, and if not us, then even without symptoms, we might accidentally kill someone we know. As soon as the word got out, then every sniffle, every cough became, oh my God, do I have COVID?
Right. Last year I had spring allergies. This year I had COVID when I sneezed.
Okay, so did you start researching this in more detail then?
I did, because I felt responsible. I was sort of drawn into it, and I have an ability that and a training that most people don't have, that I can go into what they call the research literature. And there's a big database of research literature called PubMed. You can go on it, just, you know, Google, or rather DuckDuckGo.
Right. Go to a non-trackable browser.
That's okay. Right. And Google PubMed, bam, you're up there, and you can put in a search term. So, for example, COVID mortality. And you'll get the scientific papers rather than the newspapers.
Right.
And what did you find different there? How was the scientific literature reflecting the virus pandemic as opposed to the New York Times?
One of the first things I found was that death rate was way inflated. And when you start looking at the general population, and then when you consider the possibility of asymptomatic infection.
No symptoms.
no symptoms, but you had it, you got over it. And you could tell that later by looking for antibodies. And now you can look for T cells, which is another kind of immune system cell, specifically against the...
T-cell immunity.
Yeah, T-cell immunity. Mm-hmm. And the more I saw, the more I saw that, whoa, this thing is not a risk. We're not in a major epidemic. We are, at worst, in a bad flu season. Hmm. And then I dug further, and what I found is that the death rates from COVID were being mercilessly inflated. So I started to call my friends in the medical professions. You know, I called doctors who are working in clinics, who are working in old folks' homes, who are working in emergency rooms, who's working in hospitals. Mm-hmm. And the common story was that they were under tremendous pressure to say that someone was infected with COVID, with SARS-CoV-2. But I'm just going to say COVID, for God's sake.
Sure.
Whether or not they were, and if they died, they were under tremendous pressure from the hospital administration and so on, to say that they died from COVID. Hmm. So the most extreme example I found was an investigative reporter. And investigative reporters, you're up. Now is your time, right? She was in Florida. She was looking at the death list from COVID, and she saw this 23-year-old male died of COVID. She's like, that's really strange. So she goes down to the coroner, and she says, wow, this is where this 23-year-old that died of COVID, that's not very common. What happened? Did he have some other disease? Oh, no. He actually was in a motorcycle accident, got hit by a car and died. But we swabbed him for COVID and he was positive. So we called it a COVID death. So this is the kind of shenanigans that were going on.
So it was just bundled with whatever else was wrong with that person.
Exactly. And then all they had to do was test positive for COVID on a PCR swab. So then I started digging into the PCR swab, which was invented by a Nobel Prize laureate.
Now, supposedly that's the gold standard for determining whether you have COVID or not. The PCR
exactly.
test.
And, right? As it turns out, it's not gold. It's fertilizer.
Oh, I see.
Fertilizer naturally derived from cows.
Oh, my.
And yet it's still being used.
And we're going to have to go to a break and talk about it when we get back.
All right.
Okay.
Let's look at that a little bit more.
I didn't hear it.
PCR fertilizer.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dr. Michael Arnold, a local MD who's been researching the whole COVID crisis and has a few very interesting and different opinions on what's going on and how to proceed. We got as far as the PCR test. Now, the PCR test has been reputedly the standard, the gold standard for everyone to use, and you're saying is more of a fertilizer standard. Now, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
PCR, if you want to look it up, it stands for polymerase chain reaction. Yeah. And it's the way of looking for RNA, which is the genetic material of the virus.
Yeah.
The thing is, it doesn't look for the whole RNA that's in there. It just looks for a little section of it. And if there's a little section of RNA floating around in your body that looks remotely similar to it, then that could become a false positive. In other words, you could think it was COVID and it's not.
It says it's a match and it's when it's not.
Exactly. And the developer of that test got a Nobel Prize for developing that test. Mm-hmm. And you can see him on YouTube saying that this is not a diagnostic test. A positive PCR test is not diagnostic of disease. The only thing it means is that you have a little piece of RNA floating around in your system somewhere that bears some resemblance to a little segment of RNA in the COVID virus. The other issue with the PCR test is that it's based on replication. So, you know, suppose you have one piece of COVID RNA floating around in your body, then they duplicate it. So it goes, you know, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32.
But they duplicate the image, not the RNA, right? The test?
How do they duplicate it?
Yeah, what are they upcycling?
They
actually take that piece of RNA and they run this little enzyme through it that copies RNA.
Oh.
And then they run it through a thing that sucks out all the RNA that matches their sequence, and then they do it again.
Oh, so they replicate it and then take a sample, and then replicate it and take a sample.
Well, they replicate it, then isolate it, then replicate it, then isolate it.
So it's a way of turning one into a million.
Yeah, just do powers of two, right? 32, 64, 128, whatever comes after that.
Now, there's been some controversy over that procedure, right? That after so many repetitions, everything is positive?
That's exactly right. So yeah. That multiplication process, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, is called how many cycles did you run it through, or how many repetitions did you run it through? And everybody agrees that anything over 25 is really totally unreliable.
Because you just made it up.
Yeah.
You just added the dose that you were looking for.
Exactly. It's kind of like if you're saying, is there a noise there? You put a microphone and then you just keep turning up the volume knob. Sooner or later, you're going to hear a noise, right? So I was hearing from Dr. Sun that they were running it at, 35?
I was just reading a newly published article about the fellow who I covered on a story last year. His name is Dr. Reiner Fuhlmich, who last year we highlighted Dr. Reiner Fuhlmich because he is for the second time taking the German Bundestag to court for fraud in the area of declaring a false pandemic. And he did this apparently during the H1N1 virus, which he felt the evidence was that the government paid all this money to the pharmaceuticals to get the vaccine, and then people didn't use the vaccine, and then the government paid the pharmaceuticals to dump the vaccine. So they got paid coming and going for a fraudulent declaration of pandemic. So Mr. Fuhlmich is once again filing in court in Germany. He and 1,000 lawyers and 10,000 doctors have filed a lawsuit, legal proceedings against the CDC, the WHO, and the Davos Group for crimes against humanity. And he and his team present the incorrect PCR test and the order for doctors to describe any comorbidity death as a COVID death as fraud. So
that's what you're talking about.
Exactly, I'm saying, yes. And they should be sued. I mean, in my world, it's criminal. So first of all, the PCR test is a laboratory test that's used in an experimental context. Mm. It's not a clinical test for disease.
The next sentence here says the PCR test was never designed to detect pathogens and is 100% inaccurate at 35 cycles. All PCR tests monitored by the CDC are set at 37 to 45 cycles. The CDC acknowledges that tests over 28 cycles are not allowed for a positive, reliable result.
Hmm. Exactly. So there I am back in whenever it was, February of 2020. Calling up my friend and saying, well, I looked into this and this is utterly ridiculous. And then you see the numbers in the newspaper, or you go on the video and they have this like little counter, how many cases of COVID and how many died and all this. It's all to induce fear. And the fact of the matter is, to this day, nobody knows how many cases of COVID and how many people actually died of COVID.
It makes me wonder who would want to induce this much fear in the population.
Absolutely. And that then becomes a political question, right?
Yeah, and a financial question. I think if you follow the money, you can pretty much see who the politicians are catering to.
I agree. All I can say is, medically, if people weren't dying, it would be a joke and a farce. The idea that we have a COVID epidemic, that we had to have a reliable PCR test for COVID. And then another one is the systematic and vigorous suppression of any possibility of any other treatment than vaccination or hospitalization.
Yeah, tell me about that. I mean, I remember listening to Dr. Gold mention that and how she was not allowed to prescribe certain things again, like hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
Was that your experience as well?
I tried.
Somebody told you don't prescribe that?
I tried. I came out of retirement and the pharmacist wouldn't fill it.
The pharmacist then could stop you.
And at a certain point in California, if you prescribed hydroxychloroquine, for which there's medical evidence, especially in early COVID, early treatment is the key. If you take one thing away from this, early treatment is the key. Mm. Okay? They just wouldn't fill it. And then at a certain point, the state of California said, if you prescribe hydroxychloroquine for COVID, that's unprofessional conduct.
Well, who said that?
The state of California.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure what agency there, the medical board maybe? But for a doctor to hear the words unprofessional conduct, that's blood-chilling for a doctor.
Yeah, that's usually reserved for much more serious offenses.
They'll take you to court and take your license. There goes all those years of training.
Yep, and there's your career down the drain. Flipping those burgers. And the other one was ivermectin, which I also tried to prescribe. And again, the pharmacies wouldn't fill it, except for a few progressive pharmacies. So these treatments, which if you look at the medical literature, and if you'd like to, it's easy to do. You could go on the FLCCC, just DuckDuckGo that, or Frontline Critical Care Coalition.
And FLCCC. Now, you said DuckDuckGo because you don't get these with a Google search?
I don't know, because I stopped using Google because they take all your data and then they use it against you. So
that's right. They use it to censor you. They yeah, see what you're paying attention to, and if it isn't in alignment with their desires, even if it's completely legal, they just censor you.
Is that your experience too, Bobby?
They filter the information. Like if you wanted to see information about Dr. Mercola, if you use Google, you won't see him come up. But if you use DuckDuckGo, his website comes up.
Even though he voluntarily took all his useful nutritional information down because he was getting death threats from cancel culture. What is wrong with our society right now?
Interesting. So did you look into the whole mask situation as well?
I did not look as deeply into that. But in my opinion, if 99.9-something% of the population are really not at risk, the idea of wearing masks is laughable.
But what if one person is at risk and you know someone who's at risk and your undiagnosed symptoms that you're healthy enough to fight off gets traced to a gathering that you had that led to a person dying? Should you be held responsible?
Well, that's an interesting scenario, but doctors, or at least this doctor, thinks in terms of cause and benefit. So basically, you're talking about the shutdown. And how many people died from the shutdown? If COVID didn't even exist, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but just if it didn't, but we just had this shutdown anyway, how many people died from that? Well, I heard today that the suicide rate of young people in America has gone up 300%. Okay? So that's a lot.
And the loss of jobs and the depressions associated with that.
How many people fell into drug abuse from the stress of losing their job? Yeah. How many people got battered by their spouse because they were cooped up at home together under tremendous stress? So I do feel that there are people at risk, just as there are people at risk from the flu or any other infection that sweeps through the population. In fact, that's a common scenario that you have some person who has other medical conditions and they're debilitated and they're weak and so on, like take nursing home, right?
Do you think the motivations for this?
We have to go to a break.
Okay.
We are speaking with Dr. Michael Arnold on the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with our buddies, Bobby Wilder and callers. Be patient, folks. We're going to get to you after the break.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Yes, we were going to get a little bit into the motivations behind the whole focus. The main thing I was wondering is, was there a sense of fear from the medical authorities that maybe like a weaponized virus was loose on the populace, we need to do something immediately? Or was it more of a financial power and money grab? I'm wondering about that. Do you have any strong opinions either way on that?
I have thoughts
and
opinions. But that's a different ground. When I speak about the medical things I'm speaking about, these are things I've researched for hundreds of hours. And so
stay on that ground for the time being.
Well, I'm not saying stay on that ground. I'm just saying that in that arena, I'm extremely well-informed. When you come to the motivations or what the people high up are thinking, another thing I've paid almost no attention to is the politics.
Yeah.
So I was absolutely stunned when I spoke with a friend I hadn't talked to for a while, and I said, I'm recommending ivermectin. And he said, oh, so you're with Trump. And I'm like, okay, if Trump said the sky was blue, does that mean it's not blue?
No.
Yeah, pretty much in 2020.
Yeah, and you use bleach too, right? Right.
So if you want me to speculate, I'll be glad to do so, but I want to make it clear that's different.
You might end up doing a little bit of that because we've got a board full of callers.
Okay. We do, and let me bring in Michael Olson, who always has something golden to contribute to the show. Hi,
hey, Michael.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for bringing a guest to the radio today. Very informative. I did hear you talk about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and wanted to make mention, if you haven't already, that India has opened up to using both and is seeing a significant collapse in its fatality rate. Hmm. And evidently, this is a great cause for concern to the powers that be in the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical industry, because they are demonstrating the efficacy of these two common, easy-to-get medications. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if you've heard of that.
Yes, absolutely.
What can you tell us about the Indian situation?
I haven't looked into that. What I've looked into is the research articles, and there are a number of research articles out of India showing that ivermectin is effective both in the prevention of COVID. So they did a great study of healthcare workers where they gave half of them prophylactic ivermectin and the other half not, and they're all working in the hospital, and the half that got ivermectin didn't get COVID. And the half that didn't get ivermectin, it was like 50 or 80% then began to test positive for COVID. The thing about ivermectin is it seems to be useful throughout the course of treatment. And then we saw recently that dynamic where in the American news, which by the way is in my world extremely limited and distorted, but it was basically saying, oh my God, COVID ran wild in India, millions are dying, so on and so forth. Mm. And when I looked into that just a little deeper, it was in provinces that weren't using ivermectin. So yes, I'm familiar with the, I am.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, so it makes sense. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. We do have plenty of other callers.
You up for another caller?
Oh, absolutely.
Should we go to Q&A? Okay, great. Let's say hello to Anne Marie in Watsonville. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi. I hope you guys are doing well. Thank you for always having a very valid show, especially in this world where we don't know if up is down or black is white.
Yeah.
Well, I say let's vote on it.
Well, how would we know those votes would be valid and who's counting?
Yeah, right.
I believe in local democracy. We'll just ask the people in the room, okay?
Thank you so much. I'm listening, and I've been very open to anything and any information. Mm. I was very interested in the whole, all I really heard about was the hydroxychloroquine. But I did hear quite a bit, and I couldn't help but note that in the beginning, doctors were trying it and saying, this is the only thing it really seems to be helping. This was in the very beginning. And as they were trying it at all levels of care for the COVID patient. And so some were dying and some weren't. And it turned out from what they said is that it seemed to work best if you caught the COVID virus at the very beginning. And when it started catching on, all of a sudden there was this huge propaganda wave against hydroxychloroquine. And remember that black doctor who had the background of her culture? She believed in voodoo, didn't he?
Yes, that was
spirits.
That was a very big moment in the hydroxychloroquine.
Of course, that
story
was used to disenfranchise the entire movement.
Right, which is very odd in a Christian nation. Well, it's not an entirely Christian nation, but there's, you know, a lot of Christians in this country. And all you got to do if you want to see spirit possession is look in the Bible. Jesus Christ cast out spirits.
But Simone Gold, who started the thing, was Jewish. You know,
that's right.
She is
that's
Jewish. Right. Which is,
and what I'm trying to say is they used her background in voodoo. And who's to say it's not true? It's been there for millions of years.
Yeah.
But beside the point of the fact that she is a licensed, practicing, very good medical doctor who was proclaiming that hydroxychloroquine was real. It had been around for over 60 years. It was very effective for what they were using it with in conjunction with something else. And other doctors were saying it too. And then on social media, this doctor who had the voodoo background belief system was being trashed and laughed at. And I tried to point out, what does her religious belief have to do with the fact?
Let me say this. whoever is running this circus of there's an epidemic and everybody be afraid, submit and take the vaccine, they have hundreds and millions of dollars to put into convincing the general public. So if I would say me, for example, would come to their attention because I'm being forthright about my opinions, then there are people who get up in the morning and their job all day would be to smear people like me, to discredit people like me, and to make sure that if you Google people like me, the first 10 or 20 hits is, well, Michael Arnold, you know, picks his toes in Poughkeepsie or whatever, you know, they'll find something. Mm-hmm. And so that's very systematic and deliberate. And we're in kind of a David and Goliath situation because while they have hundreds of millions of dollars to convince people of what, from my point of view as a doctor, having researched the subject, is completely false, I don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to undo that convincing. And that's why I'd really like people at the grassroots level to start rising up and saying, hey, this doesn't make any sense at all, and I'm not going to submit to it. And I'm not going to submit to an experimental vaccine just because if I don't, they might not let me on the plane when I go on vacation.
Yeah, don't consent. I believe in informed consent, which includes the right to say no.
Absolutely. And I was reflecting this morning that our foremothers would be weeping to see that the freedoms that people fought and died for and struggled for, that in this day, someone would just give it up for a donut, literally for a donut. So I'm sorry, I'm ranting a little, but I feel strongly.
I think that was very valid. Thank you so much, Doctor. But what I was wondering about is, you know, I'm an open-minded, nuts and bolts, objective, logical kind of person, very analytical. And I couldn't help but note that after they smeared and continued to smear this doctor with the voodoo background, any other doctors who stood up with her were also smeared. And then it was coming out that doctors were quietly admitting that they were getting basically threats. Do not use it. Don't promote it. Don't suggest using hydroxychloroquine or any other thing. Well, what I couldn't help but notice is when President Trump and his whoever it was that worked closely with them, when they got COVID, they go in the hospital and 2-3 days later he comes out saying, I feel better than before.
You're right. Yeah, well, it's propaganda. Propaganda, really, it's not about the facts. It's about who is saying the facts.
And please understand also that the medical literature, which they're waving around saying, well, we have experimental studies that blah, 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 that is not reliable. That has also become propaganda. The research establishment is corrupt. And the classic example was that the Lancet, which is one of the foremost medical journals in America, and supposed to be totally reliable, published this study that hydroxychloroquine didn't work.
And was dangerous.
And was dangerous. You. A huge study that if it was true, you know, would be very convincing. And then people started saying, hey, wait a minute, they couldn't possibly have done this study. How'd they get that huge database? And look, it didn't all crossfoot. It didn't all balance. Lancet retracted the article. In the meantime, the FDA had posted on their website, or maybe it was the CDC, hydroxychloroquine is dangerous. It doesn't work. Don't use it. And the article was retracted, but the posts saying don't use hydroxychloroquine were not. Mm-hmm. So,
even though hydroxychloroquine has been around for over 60 years and relatively as safe as a mother's teepee, it has been shown to work. But what I wanted to also add was that earlier in the COVID crisis, there were a couple nurses who called into KSDO, and one actually seemed scared of being caught, and she was from New York. And she called in and said that she was working in the hospital and that she was seeing that this was all, it was almost like a Nazi regime exercise in tyranny, absolute tyranny. But I would have wanted to ask is I have a dear friend who lives across the street from one of the biggest hospitals, and he was telling me, Anne Marie, I'm seeing these bodies taken out, and they're filling them in these refrigerator trucks. So what I wanted to know is while I believe that the COVID situation has been greatly inflated, what do we say to those who say, look, I've seen the bodies piling up? What is that?
Good question. I don't personally have any direct information for you on that.
Okay.
Are there actually more people dying this last year than the year before.
Well, even on the CDC website, and yeah. I haven't tracked this down, but I've heard of other people, what they call the all-cause death rate, which is how many people died this month
right.
from any cause whatsoever,
yeah.
didn't budge a bit, didn't change a bit. But every year there's a flu season, and sometimes the hospitals get overwhelmed. So if you look at the 18-19 flu season, the hospitals were overwhelmed. The emergency rooms were overwhelmed. They had tents in the parking lot, nowhere to put everybody, and so on and so forth. But that was not inflated to the level of a world lockdown epidemic.
Yeah.
And also understand that there was intense COVID with a lot of sick people in certain limited areas, like the New York metropolitan area or Wuhan.
Right. And the thing that's so different about this lockdown is that never before have healthy people who aren't in the area where there's a huge outbreak also been locked down, right? Just to prevent it.
Which didn't work anyway.
Didn't work anyway.
And that's not how you work with an epidemic anyway.
We have to go to another break, and be patient, everybody. We will get to all the calls after this.
Me and Dale were singing Little Runaway. I was flying.
Okay, boy, this hour's going fast. Another final 15 minutes. We have Dr. Michael Arnold in the studio and his research with ivermectin and the whole COVID crisis. And we have a slate full of callers, so let's go back to the callers.
All right. Colonel Terry, welcome to the show.
Hi, beautiful. I just want to share one term and see if your expert has an opinion. I have had colloidal silver cure me of terrible infections, including an infected root canal tooth that they wanted to pull, and I dumped colloidal silver on my gums and on it, and it was cured in 2 days. Okay? True story. Is it possible colloidal silver under your tongue might also help regarding protection from COVID? And I'll take his reply off the air.
All right. Thank you, Colonel Terry. What a surprise.
Thank you, Colonel Terry. Actually, another friend asked me to look into the whole colloidal silver thing. So I do have an opinion, and I can answer, which is that colloidal silver is pretty antibacterial and antiviral. You would want to be cautious about taking a high dose or taking it on a regular basis, but I would consider it possible that taking some colloidal silver would have activity against COVID or against SARS-CoV-2. One of my problems with the colloidal silver issue is, or was, when I did that review, there's not really a lot of experimental data. There's a lot of stories, which we call anecdotal data. Mm. But, you know, if it feels right for you and you feel it's safe, go for it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, some people like to clear out their nose with a colloidal silver solution as part of that, like a nasal.
Yeah, that would kill stuff in there. Yeah.
How about nebulizing it?
Nebulizing it, as they say.
Would that be okay or not?
Nebulizing, people do that, and I haven't really read bad things happen, and some people feel good things happen. But again, I would be a little cautious about a dose, and I would be cautious about long-term. It's relatively safe. The main thing is if you take too much silver, you can get a skin discoloration, kind of like tarnished silver. So, but that, you know, that's not fatal, but still.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, this is Dan from Milipedis who called at the end of the first hour. So this is hard to predict. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for picking up my call here. I just wanted to say, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. This is from experience. Total textbook World War II tactics. My grandma came back from Germany with, speaking of technology, the very first IBM computer was built in, for the concentration camps to give the insignia numbers, the 3, 2, and 4, which is the same as our Social Security sequence. And just like to pick on a few solutions, and I know that because I saw her arm.
Okay, Dan, can you ask a question? We're running out of time.
Yeah, we got a few questions for the doctor while you're on.
Oh, okay. If you have ever heard of the seed that they have at the Rosicrucian Museum that they undug from King Tut's tomb, and that they grew it, and it had 20 amino acids that we've never seen before. And another guy, his name is Rene Quinton, which is using seawater as self-vaccinations in 1905. And then I could take that off the air. 1905, right. Rene Quinton, self-vaccinations. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
These are both totally news to me. It sounds very interesting. And I will say that I've found many, many treasures in the history of medicine which have been abandoned in the frenzied pursuit of a pharmaceutical pill.
Mm-hmm. All right. So would you say that there are better ways to treat your health than taking pills?
In general, absolutely. And I echo, I forget who said it, Benjamin Franklin maybe, that if all the pills were thrown into the ocean, mankind would be that much the better, and the fish would be that much the worse. So for me, a pharmaceutical is a last resort. I'm not saying you wouldn't want to use it, but real healing involves bringing your life into balance, bringing your mind into balance, connecting spiritually with why you're even here, cultivating good social network, cultivating a good diet, movement, exercise, regimen, meaningful work that makes you feel useful, helping others. These are the foundations of health, and that's just pretty much absent from our medical system.
Would you say there's such a thing as natural immunity?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Natural
by that.
Immunity. It's how the immune system works without being enhanced, like with vaccine.
Okay. There's two kinds of immunity in the human body. And the first kind is there. And I think that's what you're talking about. And it doesn't do these antibody T cell thing. It's just like there's a bunch of immune cells and they go around, you know, like some kind of police force. And they go, you don't look right. But instead of saying, let me see your papers, they say, let me see your glycoproteins, right? And they look all over and they go, that just does not look like a human cell. You're out of here, buddy. And they jump on it and they eat it. And once it's inside, they like spit bleach on it and kill it, okay? So that's the innate immune system is what they call it.
Yeah.
And that's really the system that people heal from COVID with because it kicks in right away.
Yeah.
So the idea of herd immunity, immunity means people won't get it, right? So all of the people who potentially might not have symptoms and be infecting people, they already have immunity, right?
Yes. Now that's the second thing, which is when there's an infection that's significant enough, the system, in a sense, sends for reinforcements. Mm. And reinforcements take about a week to come. And when they show up, they're specialists. So in that case, say the COVID virus, the immune system looks at the COVID virus and it says, this shape is weird, this shape is weird, this shape is weird. And it sends off to other immune cells who start churning out antibodies against those specific shapes.
Mm. Hmm.
Before you see antibodies, that takes 6 or 7 days.
6 or 7 days. What about with the mRNA vaccines? How long does it take for your system to respond to the
that's
spike
a good
protein?
Question. That's not something I've looked into, but I'm assuming it's a similar timeline.
Yeah, because, 6 or 7 days.
Yeah, because the immune system has to look at it. And then the cell that could churn out that specific antibody has to be sort of located. And then that cell multiplies a zillion-fold. And then it starts spewing out antibodies. So that takes time.
Hmm.
And then the T cell scenario is the same. There's one T cell that looks at one specific shape. And it has to multiply a whole bunch. And then those T cells go out and they basically start latching on to whatever that shape is somewhere in the system.
To escort them out of the system.
Yes, or to escort them into oblivion.
Right.
Now, we've been hearing about this phenomenon known as shedding. Wondering whether or not that's real or whether...
Should people be afraid that they can get the vaccine just from the aerial particles of someone who got the vaccine?
That's a very good question, and that is something that I've looked into. Mm-hmm. And of course, COVID is very new. The vaccines are incredibly new. Mm. I certainly wouldn't fly in an airplane that was built under those circumstances. But when a person gets a vaccine, it's only to one shape. It's not like the normal immune system, which makes antibodies and T cells against many shapes that are on the virus.
In this case, it's just the spike protein.
Just the spike protein.
Yeah.
And of course, their body starts manufacturing spike proteins, and there's spike proteins floating around all over. And that's the basis of all these bad reactions to the vaccine, including death, okay? And they start shedding it. They start shedding it when they breathe and in their saliva and, you know, anything that comes out of the body.
Okay, so if Mrs. Future gets the vaccine and I get spike protein from her.
It's going to be the other way around, honey.
Intimate contact.
Wouldn't my system then see it as something to defend against if I'm picking up the spike proteins from other people and then I wouldn't have to get the vaccine because I got it from you?
That's an interesting idea.
That's what I'm thinking. Like the easiest way to have a collective immunity is like all the vaccine people got it for all of us who don't want to get the vaccine, and all we have to do is inhale the same air, and then we get the antibodies.
The T-cells.
Well, we don't get the antibodies. We get the spike proteins. Because they're the little things floating
but
around,
And once we get them, then we may start making antibodies against them.
Right.
I don't know. What I do know is that this was a concern when they designed the study in Pfizer. So if you look at the Pfizer study protocol, page 76, you're going to see they have a provision. We want to know if a person that's in the trial has contact with a pregnant woman.
Because transmission is a possibility.
Yes. So the downside would be that the spike protein would cause the same kind of terrible inflammation in the person who's exposed to the vaccinated person as it does in the COVID infection, and that their immune system would go nuts. And what we have seen clinically is a big jump in abnormal bleeding when people are exposed to the vaccine.
Especially women.
Yeah, but the bottom line is some people have terrible reactions and some people have no reactions at all. And you just really don't know.
Yeah. You don't know.
So listen, we only have 30 seconds. You have a book coming out, right?
It's out. You can get it on my website. My name is Michael Arnold, A-R-N-O-L-D. So if you Google Michael Arnold, M-D-L-A-C, MichaelArnoldMDLAC.com, you go to the store. It's right there at the top. How to Save Your Loved Ones from COVID.